welcome to the first 2020 episode of the 3-Bid League podcast. It's a new decade for the A-10 as we leave the 2010s behind with some great games now in the rearview mirror. I want to thank you all for giving your nominations for Game of the Decade. Really just a great way to kind of remember some of the best that A-10 basketball had to offer over the last 10 years. As always, I'm Tyler, joined by Matt. We're looking forward to a great 2020, and most specifically, we're looking forward to a great January 2nd of 2020.
Yeah, just can't wait for the conference season to start. We finally made it through 2 months of the non-conference. Things haven't gone quite as well for the A-10 the last couple weeks, so I'm glad we finally made it to this point. And should be a good year. It's going to be really competitive. A lot of these teams are close, and we're just going to kind of revisit our preseason rankings, just sort of our thoughts back then and what's changed since then, what we expect for the conference season. So should be a good one coming up, and we can't wait for Thursday.
Yeah, we want to really go deep into a few of the teams here today. We'll touch on everybody, at least in some form or fashion, but I know we're each really fascinated by probably about a half dozen teams as we go into conference play. Really some of the biggest, I don't really want to say question marks, because a team like Rhode Island, we know they're going to be good. It's just a matter of how good, and we'll go into that here.
Yeah. All right. So we'll just start off. We're going to go through the preseason poll and give some thoughts on these teams real quick. So VCU was the preseason favorite after they ran through the A-10 last year. They're 10-3 right now with a big win over LSU and then losses to good teams. At this point, I don't want to say VCU is underperformed, but they definitely haven't been quite as good as I expected, and they did have very high expectations. They were a preseason top 25 team. And right now, they're probably still sitting at one of the best teams in the A-10. But what are your thoughts so far? Can VCU still contend in the A-10?
Yeah, I mean, we've made a big deal about really some of the bad performances for the Rams so far. But when I really sat down and thought about it, they're kind of just exactly who we thought they were. They haven't truly blown us away, which is difficult to do when you have such a poor offense. I guess that's the wrong wording. Not really a poor offense, but poor compared to what I guess we were hoping it could be.
Yeah, it's just kind of okay. The defense has held them down.
They don't ever lose to bad teams. So for anyone who's getting excited that they're going to lose to Fordham tomorrow, it's not going to happen. They're going to take care of business against every lesser opponent. But for them, and whether or not they get into the tournament, they're going to have to take care of business against teams at their own level. And I think they're better than Rhode Island. I think they're better than Richmond. But I think it's close enough where those offensive woes could really become a problem for them. Now, before anyone gets into panic mode, if they go about 14-4, they're going to be in the tournament pretty comfortably. And if they can snag a split with Dayton, then that's even more assurance for them. But, you know, my outlook on VCU really hasn't changed. I still think they're going to be really good. I think they'll be 14-4, 15-3 in this conference. And the only reason why I would move them down in the rankings is because going into the year, I wasn't fully sold on them being better than Dayton anyway. I always thought Dayton had more talent, and I deferred to the Rams because of the continuity and because of what they proved to us last year. And so Dayton taking this huge leap and becoming even better than what I think even we thought they could be, it moves the Flyers up to number one, and then VCU kind of just slips down to two because of circumstance.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair, and that's why I hesitate to say that VCU's underperformed this year. My only concern with them is just that their non-conference is really, it's just bolstered by the LSU win at home, and LSU's kind of been up and down this year. They did smoke an undefeated Liberty team last week, so that's a step in the right direction for them, but if LSU ends up not being that good, then VCU's non-conference resume is kind of empty because they really did blow the rest of their chances. So I still agree, though. I think they're probably going to go 14-4 in the A-10, maybe 13-5, which should get them close to a tournament berth. I'd say 14 wins would get the job done. But they didn't leave themselves a great margin for error. I would have felt a lot better about this team if they won either the Purdue or Wichita State game, which they didn't. But still, I mean, they're a good team. They're going to finish top three in the A-10, I think.
I mean, they're basically kind of what St. Mary's is every year, where we're going to look back at the end of the year, their resume is going to be sparkling. They're going to have no or maybe one bad loss. All of the good teams that they lost to, they played pretty solid games against, with the exception of Wichita State. Really their only bad game of the season. They're not going to have the great resume-making win unless they win at UD Arena. And, you know, come Selection Sunday, they'll be like a 9 or a 10 seed.
Yeah,
unless, of course, they really pick it up here. Now, I think this offense can get better, and we've talked a lot about that. But unless Evans really wakes up and becomes their go-to isolation guy again, that's what VCU's destiny looks like, is a 9 or a 10 seed in this tournament. Their ceiling, they can still get up to probably a 6 or a 7, I think.
Yeah, I definitely think they have that talent. And so anyway, they are 46th in the net rankings, which is still pretty early for these to be super important, but that pretty much puts them squarely on the bubble. So they definitely need to take care of business in conference, which I think they will. All right, so now we'll move down to number two in the preseason poll, which was Davidson, who is not... They've definitely underperformed. There's no question about that. And I thought they might be moving in the right direction after they knocked off Loyola Chicago on the road, but they just took a beating against Vanderbilt for most of the game until they actually had a late charge and only lost by 5. But that was another kind of disappointing loss for them, and it's just not the Davidson team that we expected this season.
I don't know what's left to say about this team. It's the same problems we talk about every week. Even look at that Loyola Chicago game, which I know this isn't the Sister Jean Magic Final Four team of 2 years ago, but this is still a really solid program. They got a great chance in the Missouri Valley, and going on the road and beating them is an impressive win, especially given the way the season's gone. But then you break into the box score. John Axel goes 2 for 10. He has 1 assist. Carter Collins goes 3 for 10. Luca has 4 points. And Kellen Grady just kind of bailed them out again. 7 of 11 shooting. They did a good job of keeping the ball out of Cameron Crutwig's hands. He only shot 5 times in that game, which I would have never guessed. I thought that it was going to be closer to 20 to 25.
Yeah.
Given that that's the way to beat Davidson. But there's nothing happening with this team to make me believe that things are changing. The Grady and Goodmanson dynamic has just never worked to the point where both of them are good at the same time. And I think they're closer to the 8-9 matchup than they are to a double bye.
Yeah, no, I think they've got the talent. I mean, they still have one of the best backcourts with Grady and Goodmanson. So they have the talent to beat any team in the conference, but whenever one of those guys disappears, they could also lose to anybody. I mean, last year they lost to St. Joe's, and I think they lost to LaSalle. So when one of those guys are off, it's just tough for them to beat any decent team. And I think they're going to have a couple big wins in the conference, but they're just going to be so inconsistent that I don't see them reaching the top four. I think they're still going to be middle of the pack, probably in the 5 through 7 range somewhere, but yeah, it's been disappointing. The lack of depth has really hurt now that they lost Luke Frampton, and Keyshawn Pritchett still hasn't played this year. Not sure if he'll suit up at any point, so it's been disappointing, and right now Davidson is 101st in the net, so they're not really a bad loss at this point if someone does lose to them, but they're also not a quality win, and they've kind of just played themselves out of tournament contention at this point.
Yeah, and this schedule just screams 0-2 start too. They gotta start things on the road at Duquesne and that fantastic 3-point defense. We'll touch on the Dukes later, but I think it's gonna be a solid bounce back week for them after all the disappointments of the last 2 games. And then they go to Rhode Island, and I think that that's just an absolute nightmare for them. Because Cyril Langevin and Antoine Walker, who Rhode Island fans, get ready. There will be a lot of Antoine Walker talk in the coming minutes. But those two are basically like the worst case scenario for the Wildcats. And I'm not even sure this is a surprise, because anyone who's been paying attention knows where this Davidson thing is going. But for someone who's maybe just popping in conference play, maybe a fan of another team, you should not be surprised to see the Wildcats sitting at the bottom at 0-2 a week from now.
Yeah, they could be. So one guy I do want to talk about real quick before we move on, their freshman, Hyungjun Lee, I am super impressed by, mostly because I watched him score 19 points against Loyola, but I think he's going to be a star at some point, like maybe even next year. He kind of reminds me of Peyton Aldridge a little bit, because he's got some size at 6'7", but he can also score a lot of different ways. He's good at driving to the basket, and then he's shooting 41% on threes, so I think he's got the chance to be a really good player. Hopefully that'll come to fruition next year. But just wanted to mention him. I think he's a candidate for the all-rookie team for the A-10, and he's someone that I've enjoyed watching this year. So that's one bright spot for Davidson. But yeah, any team with a lot of physicality, like a Rhode Island, that could give them some trouble. So it's been a tough season.
Lee's pretty well set up to actually fill some of what they've lost with the Frampton injury. He's a great floor spacer, but it's the same problem with Davidson over and over again, which is Lee just doesn't help them with their biggest issues, which is John Axel just disappearing into thin air and their defense. And so I'm with you. Lee is going to be a prime candidate to make the all-rookie team. If we were picking it right now, he'd be right on the edge, probably either fifth or sixth. But yep, he just enhances the one thing that they are still good at, which is shooting. And ideally, they'd love to have him as a sixth man with Keyshawn Pritchett back there. But for now, I'm not sure he actually makes sense as a sixth man with Matt Jones starting in his place. I think I'd actually rather give Lee a try and see if that helps to spark things more for them.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't be surprised, because he's especially turned on his game the last few weeks. He started the season pretty slow, but he's been playing well, so I wouldn't be surprised to see him start. But that's enough for Davidson. We will move on to the third team in the preseason poll, which is the nationally ranked Dayton Flyers, who are currently 20th in the AP poll. Dayton is 11-2 after beating North Florida for their non-conference finale. And I think it's fair to say Dayton has surpassed anybody's expectations. It's been a really fun year so far.
Rothstein already declared it. It's a Final Four year.
Oh, man. I'm not going that far. Not yet. I gotta see a little bit more. But if Rothstein's saying it, that's something, right?
I mean, I'm just glad that Rothstein took the time to go back and listen to our Bold Predictions episode after Maui when we said it.
That's true.
He was only a month behind, and no, I don't think anyone else has said it. So let's yeah, ride
it out. Well, the one thing that kind of sets up this year nicely, there's already been like five or six number one teams, so nobody's really that dominant so far. And Dayton's already shown that they can compete with the best teams in the country. I mean, they came very close to beating Kansas. And in a year like this where it's so wide open, you never know. I mean, they definitely have the potential. Now, whether or not they actually make a run in March, that's going to come down to matchups and just how well they're playing at the time. But they definitely have the potential to make some noise.
Yeah, in all seriousness, this is a conversation for after we've seen the next 14 or so games. But all that I want to say is this is not a 0% chance. And in years of chaos like this, veteran teams that are just very well crafted are the teams that tend to make tournament runs. And that's basically what Dayton is. So I'm not gonna sit here at the beginning of January and say, hey, go put your money on the Flyers to win the national title. But there is a small glimmer off in the distance. And if this team can start 12-0, 12-1 in the A-10 and start putting together some really seriously great performances, then we will talk about it down the road. But what matters right now is these next 18 games. The Flyers are the heavy favorite to win the conference. honestly, save for injury or their own lack of interest, they should win the conference.
Yeah, no, at this point, I never thought I would be saying this, but I'd actually be pretty disappointed if Dayton didn't win the regular season title outright. They've just been that great this season. And it's going to be a tough test early. They go on the road for the first time all season when they play LaSalle and St. Joe's. And that's going to be one of the keys. They just have to avoid bad losses, which they've done a good job of so far.
And this team is really just well set from a flexibility standpoint. When I sat down and tried to look at all 14 teams to put together my final pre-conference play list, one of the things that really stood out throughout the conference is with a lot of these teams, I'm not sure they have five guys that I trust in crunch time. Where you look at somebody like Rhode Island, and I'll go deeper into this in a moment, but they have Langevin, Fats, Doughton, and Tyrese Martin. I don't know who their fifth crunch time guy is. And really kind of throughout the conference, that's a recurring issue. Whereas Dayton actually has six. EB Watson would be a crunch time guy on basically any other team in this league. But yet he's coming off the bench because they have six ultimate studs. And at this point, we don't even know how good like Dwayne Cohill and Chase Johnson actually are because their minutes are stifled by the talent above them. And so on a given night where, let's say, God forbid, somebody gets hurt or Ryan Meixel doesn't have it or Rodney Chapman's having foul trouble or something like that, you just plug in EB and you got a five-man unit that's just as good as the five you would normally have.
Yeah, and it already happened too because when Jalen Crutcher was hurt and missed the Grambling State game, Ibby came off the bench and scored 30, or he started that game actually and scored 30 points. So, yeah, I mean, I'd say at this point he's got to be the best sixth man in the conference. I really don't think anyone compares right now. And that's just such a luxury because last year Dayton didn't have any of that depth. And right now they just have a lot more talent on the bench, which is good for them to have.
And it's the flexibility, too, that Ibby brings. And part of it is having two very similar players in Ryan Meixel and Trey Landers who can both slide down and guard medium-sized wings but can also slide up and guard like a Marcus Weathers or a Jermaine Harris. And then having two point guards on the opposite end with Jalen Crutcher and Rodney Chapman. Now all of a sudden you take any of those guys out of the equation and the most difficult roles to fill are always going to be filled. And then EB's just your quintessential big wing 3-and-D guy. Ideally set to play the 3. He can slide down to the 2 if need be. I actually probably think he could be an emergency 4, but it doesn't really matter because the way this roster's constructed, they're never going to need him to do that. But there's really nothing that can derail this team that could truly just take them out of a game. If somebody goes cold, they have options. And save for just any problems with Obi on a given night, they're basically just perfectly set up with contingency plans all over the place. And that includes Dwayne Cohill, too, who's putting together a nice season in limited minutes.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't score that much, but I think he does a lot that shows up outside the box for. He's a good player to have. So right now, Dayton is, I believe, 13th in the net rankings, which is very good. And they are projected to receive a 4 or 5 seed by most bracketologists. I don't know what the ceiling of this team is, but really, as long as they just don't screw it up in conference play, they should be a safe bet for the tournament. They just need to take care of business in the conference, and they should receive a pretty good seed, which is a good position to be in and something that we haven't seen for a couple years for Dayton.
Yeah, at Rhodey's going to be a brutal, brutal, brutal game. And I'm just going to go out on a limb here weeks in advance and say I think they're going to lose that night.
Yeah, and that's
other
just
than that, no reason why they shouldn't go, like, say, 16-1 across the other 17 games.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be some tough games, and just when you're nationally ranked, too, and you're the favorite, you get the target placed on your back, and that's going to happen. That's what happened a couple years ago for Dayton when they won back-to-back regular season titles. So teams are going to be ready to go against them, and especially now that they're going on the road for the first time. It's going to be tough. There's not going to be any easy nights in the A10. So should be a fun season, though, and they have the potential to do some really cool things. All right, so that's it for Dayton, I think. Oh, anything else?
No, I thought we were done already. I didn't know you were going to close that out.
I could talk about Dayton forever. It doesn't matter.
Really, it's just important as we go into conference play to give everyone a refresher on the top three teams going into the year, especially for anyone who hasn't been watching that much of the non-conference to get ready for conference play. But don't worry, we're not going to go one by one from here. I think we had together five more teams outside of those three that we really wanted to go into here going into conference play. So any preference on who to start with?
No, you take the wheel. Where do you want to start?
All right, I guess we'll just go to the preseason number four. And just because this is a team that I'm growing on with every single time I watch them play, that, of course, is the Rhode Island Rams. And I'm here to tell you guys right now why we should expect a Rams team to finish second in the A-10, but it's not the one that you would expect.
Ooh.
So,
wait, Fordham? Second place, really?
Yeah, second to the bottom place for Fordham this year.
Oh, you had me excited. Okay.
So I want to give the quick disclaimer here. I still think VCU is the second best team in the conference, and I think there's even still a case that Richmond is actually more talented than Rhode Island. But this is all setting up perfectly for Rhode Island to finish second in the league, because I think that they are the secondary matchup nightmare of the A-10. Of course, Dayton's a bad matchup for everybody, because that's just what happens when you have a mid-major team that's in the top 20. It's going to be a tough game every time you play.
Yeah.
But I just think Rhodey matches up so well with basically just about every team that matters in this conference. I think that they're perfectly set up to kind of force VCU into one of those games like the Wichita game, where the Rams, it's a bad choice of words here, where the Rhodey Rams are good enough and talented enough to score on VCU. But their defense is perfectly set up to just take VCU's mediocre offense out of it. And largely because with Langevin and Harris, they have the requisite elite big body defenders to really give Marcus Santos Silva a lot of trouble. And more importantly, for Langevin to potentially put Santos Silva in foul trouble on the other end. And as we've learned over the past few weeks, Santos Silva is now the critical cog for this VCU team. He's the one who's making their offense go. And I think that the Langevin matchup is a really, really bad one for him. I think there's a great potential for Rhode Island to be able to at least split that series. Going along, I think that they're the one team that actually matches up really well with Dayton because of the same thing. What's Dayton's weakness? Super skilled and powerful big guys. And that's Cyril Langevin. He's the one guy that I think can really give this Dayton defense a lot of trouble. And just like with VCU, they get them twice. They're going to have a great shot at getting a split with the Flyers. I think they're the flat-out ultimate kryptonite for Richmond. I don't understand how Richmond is possibly going to guard Langevin, because interior defense and rebounding are Richmond's weaknesses, and Rhode Island is perfectly set up to take huge advantage of them there. And really, there's only one team that I feel could be a kryptonite to Rhode Island, and that's St. Louis. And I mean, obviously, the Billikens are perfectly set up to play the kind of gutty, hard-nosed game that Rhode Island's going to want to play. They have Hassan French to battle with Langevin and potentially take him out. They're going to throw Jordan Goodwin on Fats and give him a lot of trouble. That's the kind of night where they're really going to need Doughton to step it up. But working in Rhode Island's favor, they only play the Billikens once. They get them at home, and they get them at kind of a weird time right near the end of the season, Sunday, March 1st, at a point where we don't really know what the Billikens are going to be going into the season. And as I just continue to look at the schedule and look at the individual matchups, I think this is a Rhode Island team that while they on the surface don't look like a potential title contender, when you break it down game by game and matchup by matchup, this team's going to be a nightmare for a lot of teams as long as we see the Ciro Langevin that we started to see again in the Providence game and not the one who's just deferring to the guards all the time.
Yeah, no, Rhode Island's been a really interesting team this year. They've only lost to really good teams on the road against Maryland and West Virginia and then neutral against LSU. And then a couple of their home wins are starting to get better and better. Alabama is starting to move up the rankings. And then Providence just killed Georgetown the other night. So they've beaten some quality competition. And I agree. I think they're a pretty good matchup, especially for teams that won't be able to handle their size very well. And it's just Rhode Island was kind of the dark horse pick by a lot of people to maybe sneak into the top two or three in the conference. I definitely think they can do that. They've honestly got a chance to win this conference if things go their way. I think they have that talent. One concern, though, I think we do need to address is their lack of depth, which has been an issue all year, and that's only gotten worse. Now that two of their guys, Gregory Hammond and Dana Tate, have left the program mid-season. So, really, they have no depth in the backcourt at all, and now they lose these two guys. That might be one thing to keep an eye on, but I do think the six or seven top players that they do have are really good and better than most teams, top six or seven.
Yeah, well, to me, what matters is that fifth spot. And I mentioned it a few minutes ago. They don't have a fifth crunch time guy because Jermaine Harris has kind of taken a step back this year. And so whether or not this whole spiel and the fact that, spoiler alert, I'm going to pick the Rams to finish second in the conference when we do that at the end of this episode, it's all going to come down to Antoine Walker. And we only have 33 minutes worth of tape of him in that Rhode Island powder blue uniform. But man, has it been an impressive 33 minutes. He's basically everything that was advertised about him. He looks like a guy who absolutely should have been going to a Big East school out of high school like he was. He's athletic. He moves pretty well. He's 10 of 13 shooting so far. 7 rebounds in his first game, only 1 in the Middle Tennessee State game. But he's kind of lining up to be the perfect complement to these other four. Now that Tyrese Martin has filled in the floor spacing and established himself as a guy who can be relied upon as a perimeter shooter, they can afford to have another down low player next to Langevin with those three guys up top. I think Antoine Walker is slowly becoming the key X factor, not only for Rhode Island, but in the whole conference. I think he could take on I don't want to say a starring role because this team's not set up for him to do that, but I think he has a chance to be one of the elite role players in the conference. And everything that I've seen so far from him really makes me feel confident about backing him as Rhode Island's number 5 guy, which then turns Jermaine Harris into a pretty great defensive and rebounding backup center.
Yeah, no, Walker is looking good this year. And you mentioned, I mean, he's got 21 points through 2 games, and he's not even doing that in very many minutes. So I think he could be huge for them. That's just another weapon that they have that they could maybe plug into that fifth spot. I know he hasn't started so far, but maybe at some point in the future once he gets more game experience. But yeah, we don't really know too much just because it's only been 2 games, but he's definitely got the chance to suddenly become maybe a star in this conference that could take Rhode Island to another level.
Yeah, and for anybody who hasn't done their Fantasy A-10 draft yet, Antoine Walker, good sleeper.
Yeah, you stole him. I was just about to take him. Yeah, he's going to be good. I did come from Georgetown, so that's a big-time program.
I'm just glad that Fantasy A-10 is a thing now so that we can become the guys who just talk about our fantasy team on the podcast incessantly.
Yeah, that'll be a lot of fun. So for those who don't know, you can go on fantracks.com. They very customizable fantasy leagues. You can do pretty much anything you want for college basketball. So we started a league going with just the A-10. It should be a lot of fun this year, and it gets pretty deep. I mean, you can really choose a lot of different options, and we had our draft a few days ago, so we'll see how that turns out. I have no idea, like, what I'm doing drafting an A-10 fantasy team, but Should be fun. And yeah, you stole Antoine Walker from me, which is disappointing because I knew he had some good games, but you got him right before I could draft him.
And hey, Fantrax, if you're listening, you get that free one. If you want any more love, you got to pay. You can sponsor the pod if you want.
Yeah.
So back on a serious note, you know, for me with Rhode Island, it's coming down to three things. One, can Fats continue to keep his head on a swivel the way he has this year? And I've been really impressed by his ability to finally be able to slow down his brain while still playing at the elite foot speed that he has. Number two, can Walker become the fifth guy? Can he integrate his way into this team? And three, can Langevin go back to being the guy in the necessary games? And if all three of those things are yeses, then this is an NCAA tournament team, plain and simple. Because if those three things happen, they're going to split with Dayton, they're going to split with VCU, and they're going to be a top three team in the conference.
Yeah, and just one more thing, too, on Rhode Island. I saw a tweet for this. I believe this is the only group that has won an NCAA tournament game that's left in the A-10. So they've probably got the most big game experience, that group of Dowden, Langevin, and Fats. So that's definitely something that needs to be considered. And I think that showed in the A-10 tournament when they went on their little run there.
Yeah, so I guess we'll move on then to the Richmond Spiders, who, the more I think about it, is kind of a team that is basically in the anti-Rhode Island spot for me. I feel like they're basically just as talented as the Rams, and they are one of the few teams that have their five settled. I love that five-man starter unit, although the bench still leaves a lot to be desired again. But for me, I think Richmond matches up pretty horribly with a lot of teams. As I said, I think that Rhode Island will be a nightmare game for them. They don't have really the guys to go up against Obi Toppin and Dayton's squad of rebounders, ditto for Marcus Santos Silva and VCU's tough crew along the glass. And even teams like St. Louis and St. Bonaventure, who are going to be gutty on the perimeter and really cause the Spiders a lot of trouble for their shooting, and even Duquesne, who I think is a pretty bad matchup for Richmond this year, where they're going to struggle with Michael Hughes, the plus-minus god, and Duquesne should be able to take out some of their three-point shooting woes. So, for me, unless the Grant Golden-Nathan KO duo really takes a step forward on defense and on the glass, not just one of the two, and by the way, we've been hoping for that all year, and we still haven't really seen it yet. Unless that happens, I think the Spiders have the potential to really, really be a disappointment in this conference, to the point that they could potentially even fall into the 6 or 7 spot, even though they're more talented than that. And by the way, if you're a Richmond fan hoping for an NCAA tournament berth, you better hope that this team has a great regular season, because once they get to Brooklyn, they're probably going to have to play 3 straight days against teams that they're not well equipped to match up with. So I don't think of them as a potential bid thief at this point. Although I do think that they could get at large if their shooting is really able to overpower.
Yeah, they're going to need good shooting, because we've seen the last 2 games where they've lost to Radford and Alabama. They struggled shooting the ball, both of those. They went 7-for-24 and 6-for-24 in those games from 3. And even though their offense has been pretty good the last couple games, with their defense being kind of below average most of the time, they need their offense to be great. I mean, they gave up 90 points against Alabama. They were just giving up a ton of three-pointers, especially in the first half. I watched some of that game. And they could just never really go on a run when they were missing open shots. So I think Richmond, with their offense being as good as it is and just having so many guys that can shoot the ball, they've got the potential to beat some good teams, but they also, if they have an off night on offense, their defense isn't going to win them games. And that's kind of how we got the Radford game, where they just couldn't get it going, and it, eventually it was too late, and they lost by 15. So I think overall they still have maybe the second best offense behind Dayton in the conference, but their rebounding and defense is going to hold them back. I still think they're a top four contender, but we'll see. It's going to be, I agree that some of their matchups in the A-10 against the top teams could be challenging for the Spiders.
You say they're a top four contender, like that should still be a surprise. I mean, while at this point, I'm not going to pick them to finish top four because I just don't think things line up very well for them. This is maybe the third most talented team in the conference.
Yeah, I mean, their starting lineup for sure.
Playing the A-10. Like, if they were in the Pac-12, I actually think that's a better setup for them. But just given the way the A-10 is built with all of these elite centers, and a lot of teams with the elite centers tend to have a pretty good perimeter defense, Richmond's kind of just the better version of Davidson, where they have to rely on their outside shooting a ton. They're going to have to hope that their rebounding and interior defense gets a lot better. But the difference between Richmond and Davidson is that Richmond has Grant Golden, who gives them a whole different layer on offense and allows them to kind of rely on a post game when the shooting goes bad. That's why Richmond's so far above Davidson in my mind, but it's going to be tough for the Spiders unless they really fix some of those defensive issues.
Yeah, and that's just kind of what happens when you live and die by the three like they do. When the other parts of your game just aren't clicking, which they often aren't for Richmond, it can be tough to beat good teams. So I think they're going to be kind of inconsistent. Not really sure what you're going to get from them any given night, but we still do have to give them credit. I don't think a lot of people, I know you were actually high on them preseason. I don't think most people would have expected them to be 10-3 right now. And they also have a really big win over Wisconsin. So it's been a successful non-conference, but it's still going to be challenged. They definitely have a lot of work to do if they want to make it to the tournament. And right now their net is sitting at 77. So that's definitely too low to get an at-large bid, but it's also not so far down the list that they have no chance. I mean, they definitely have some chances to get big wins and build a resume.
Yeah, and I think they got a decent shot against VCU. While I would favor the Rams matchup-wise in that game, I don't think that that's as big of a nightmare as some of the other teams that they're going to have to play. So if they can get a win at Seagal, which isn't even that brutal of an away game since they got to travel, what, like 3 miles to get there?
Yeah.
that'll give them a chance to get an at-large. But I just don't see them putting together anything 3 days in a row. And so they better hope they get that at large, because if not, they're going to be battling with the likes of North Carolina in March down to the NIT.
Yeah. Although we do have to say one more thing for Richmond. I would say they had the best old school logo. Those of you who follow SBU Unfurled, he uncovered a bunch of old school retro logos for the A-10. Richmond had an interesting spider. I'll let you look up the picture for that if you haven't seen it, but it's a good one. I'd say it's the best, and maybe they should bring that one back. We're definitely going to be posting that whenever Richmond does something interesting this year.
Yeah, so moving on from the retro spider to basically the anti-Richmond team, the Duquesne Dukes, who are basically the dead polar opposite, and these two losses to Austin Peay and Marshall really reinforced it. This team's going to have one of the top defenses in the A-10, but three-point shooting is going to continue to be a big, big, big problem for the Dukes. And I don't know about you, but my outlook on Duquesne really hasn't changed at all despite these two losses, because it was basically just a manifestation of everything that we thought could be an issue with the Dukes. And while I don't think that this necessarily means that this whole non-conference was for naught and we should move them down to the 8-9 game now, I really just think that this was the proof to us that Duquesne played extremely well for a stretch of games against lesser competition, and we now understand what the Duke's strengths and weaknesses are. I didn't change my prediction for them at all after these two games.
I'm not quite as optimistic. And that's just because, so I guess the reason I'll start, when they were 10-0, I was feeling pretty good about the Dukes for the simple fact that they were winning all these games comfortably. And their metrics were looking really good, but UAB and Marshall were probably bottom four or five A-10 teams. They're kind of at that level where they're not very good. And neither of those games were particularly close for Duquesne. They lost to Marshall by 22. I'm not writing off Duquesne completely, but before I thought they were maybe creeping toward a potential top four spot, I'm just not sure they're at that level. They're going to have some big tests when they play St. Louis and Davidson at home to start off the conference season, but I think that'll be a big tell for Duquesne. If they compete and win those games, I'll feel a lot better, but I just need to see them beat a good team before I say too much more about the Dukes.
Well, really what happened with Duquesne in those two games, and I'm now realizing my mistake. I'm not even going to wait till airs. Duquesne lost to UAB. They beat Austin Peay the day before that.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
So what basically happened in those two games is the three-point shooting just completely flipped. The Dukes went cold on their end, and UAB and Marshall got hot on their own end. And I don't think it's a fluke that the three-point shooting went south for the Dukes. We talked about it in our podcast with Johnny Heller that it was weird that Duquesne's three-point shooting numbers were as good as they are, given that there was no one who was really blowing the doors off from distance. So the answer as to whether or not Duquesne's a double by contender versus someone in the 7-10 range really comes down to the question of what's their true three-point defense? Is it the lockdown crew that we saw in the first 10 games, especially against Lipscomb and Radford? Or is it more representative of what they were last year and what we saw in these last two games, when UAB and Marshall both went off from deep?
Yeah, I think their defense is improved from last year. I just think you need to take all of their defensive stats with a grain of salt, though, with the schedule they've played, because let's face it, most of the teams in the A-10 are going to be better than anyone they've played, save for maybe, I mean, Indiana State and Radford are decent, but still, most of the A-10 is going to be better than them. And so while their opposing three-point percentage is one of the best in the country still, and they're blocking a ton of shots, it's hard. You have to kind of normalize it against better competition. And I'm not sure how much it means that they've only given up 29% on three-pointers. They just haven't played very many good teams, so it's hard to find how much meaning there is in some of these numbers.
Yeah, and that's what makes the Dukes still kind of the enigma of these pre-conference predictions. And for me, it really does just come down to how comfortable are you with their defense? And to a lesser extent, how comfortable are you that Carey's going to take that half step here in the next 2 months? I was pretty confident that he was. And then the whole reason that his stats were down in the non-con were because of all the blowouts and because the fact that he didn't have to be relied upon. But he's kind of in the same boat as Marcus Evans right now, where really just not 100% confident in his ability to go to that next level here in conference play. And if he does, it changes their ceiling drastically. But he was dreadful in the Marshall game. So was Tavian Dunn-Martin. Really, probably the most disappointing performance that those two have had in the same game together at any point. They go a combined 2-for-11 shooting. Dunn-Martin has 2 assists. Carey has none. And, you know, I just kind of thought that we were moving towards a place where once they got into a game like that, or a game like the UAB one where Carey was 5-for-14 with 2 assists, I thought that next level was coming, that elevation was coming. And I think that this St. Louis game is going to tell us a lot about where Carey's at right now with his game, because he's too good to have 3 bad games in a row against good competition. And I want to see him take a step up and get 20 points against the Billikens.
Yeah, no, I think he's definitely going to be tested, and he did not play very well in each of the last two games. So I do think if Duquesne is going to do anything in the A-10 this year, he's going to have to be a star. He's going to have to be one of the top point guards in the conference. And so far he's been good, but I'm not sure he's been that superstar yet that he needs to be. Which isn't to say he's been disappointing, because he still had a good season, but they're going to have to get a lot out of him because he is just so important to the Duquesne team.
So you want to move along to the Billikens?
Yeah. So St. Louis has been a pleasant surprise in the A-10, I would say. They're 11-2, and they recently hit a big win against Kansas State. I have to say that I need to apologize because I did not think St. Louis had any chance to do this preseason. I was just concerned that they were losing so much of their offense. But all of a sudden, they're looking like a contender, possibly, in the A-10. They have a couple big wins. Their only losses are against Seton Hall and Auburn, which are very good teams. I mean, Auburn's still undefeated. So the Billikens are playing great, and I'm really interested to see what they do in the A-10.
Yeah, I'd take the Billikens at number four right now. It's very, very close, and I think 4-7, possibly 4-8, depending on if either Davidson's shooting starts to come back or if Justin Kyer's healthy for Mason. I think it's basically a sucker's bet to try to guess how that's going to all pan out. But I would take the Billikens at the top of that group so far. And Jordan Goodwin and Hassan French, we talked about them in, I think that was our last episode, that they're just exactly the guys that we always believed they were. They're the ultimate gutty role players who are so good at what they do that they're basically stars without doing the traditional work of a go-to star. They might be the best perimeter interior 1-2 defensive punch in the conference. And the reason that SLU is so good is not necessarily from those two, because those two are what give them their high floor, but it's because of the young guys really stepping up and impressing us to a level that I don't think me or you or really any A-10 fan expected. Guys like Yuri Collins, guys like Terrence Hargrove, who is only playing 11 minutes a game, but is starting to show some good flashes and could be a big X factor for them in conference play.
Yeah, we definitely need to talk about Terrence Hargrove. So this is a guy that came in as a pretty high-profile recruit, and then he basically just sat the bench the first 10 games of the season. And he was kind of looked at as a project that was going to take some time to develop, but all of a sudden, in their game against Division II Maryville, he scored 27 points in 28 minutes, just all around a great game. And then he had another 10 points against Kansas State, so it seems like he's entered the rotation, and we've seen tapes of his athleticism. He's had some great blocked shots and dunks in his career already. And, you know, I do think he is kind of raw, and it's going to take some time, but he's a really exciting player, and I think he's got the chance to be really good for the Billikens.
I'm really pigeonholing this comparison because they're basically the exact opposite type of big man. But I think that he could have a similar trajectory to DJ Foreman last year, where at this point in the season, the Billikens had just lost Cartier Gordon. They had a big hole to fill at power forward. And that spot was a huge issue for them for the first month or so in conference play, just getting shredded by guys like Marcus Weathers and Ryan Meixel. And then by February, Foreman had been fully integrated into the rotation. Travis Ford had gotten him to where he needed to be, and he ended up being a huge, huge factor in the A-10 tournament. I think Hargrove could be that type of guy for St. Louis, and the growing pains are still going to be there. He's still just not that fluid of a player, but the talent is so blatantly clear. And I'm not sure we're going to see anything from him in January, but come late February into March, Terrence Hargrove could be looking like he's ready to take the step and start him.
Yeah, I mean, he's not quite as big as someone like DJ Foreman, but I think he, just with his athleticism, he can be kind of versatile for the Billikens. And yeah, I mean, it's going to take some time, but by the end of the season, you could be looking at someone with a really bright future. And I definitely just think that's such a great story that he came back and a Maryville game that was a lot closer than everyone expected. The Billikens were pretty close in that game for a while, but for him to come off the bench and have that great of a game, that might be a breakthrough for him. And that's just really exciting and great news for the Billikens, especially after they just lost Gibson Jimerson for the year. They're going to need someone to step up and play a lot of minutes off the bench.
Yeah, one of the big question marks for me is, are we going to see Fred Thatch kind of return to the path he was on going into the year? Because he has now completely and totally disappeared. Only 6 games played. I know he's been battling an illness, but he's at 16 minutes a game, 5 points a game. We thought he was going to be their number 3 guy this year. And he was such a good defender for them down the stretch last year, a critical 6th man for them. The shooting that we thought was going to improve hasn't. He's 2-for-12 from deep. But he's just a guy that I'd like to see come back into the rotation, especially with the loss of Jimerson. I mean, they're pretty similar positionally. That's some open minutes for Thatch. And he actually is a guy who compares a lot to the profile of Foreman, albeit at a different position, of just that gutty defender, good X factor, good rebounder. And he's kind of a perfect Travis Ford type of player.
Yeah, he was kind of the big breakout candidate for SLU this year because he was pretty good as a freshman off the bench and just hasn't gotten to play that much due to his illness. It sounds like he's on his way back soon, which would be another piece to the puzzle that would help them out. And I definitely think he's got that potential. I mean, it might take some time just since he's been off the court for a while, but especially on the defensive end. I mean, St. Louis is already a great defensive team, and he just helped that and make them even better on that end. So I definitely think he can still have an impact this year.
So I think the last big question mark team that we wanted to talk about, a squad that is beginning to slowly rise up the ranks and now looking like a pretty confident, not going to be playing in Wednesday team, the LaSalle Explorers. And I just want to start with, man, we knew it last year and now it's becoming obvious. Ashley Howard might be a pretty good coach.
Yeah, so far LaSalle, I mean, what a turnaround for them. They were kind of the punching bag of college basketball last year when they went 0-10 to start the season, but they're looking really good this year. Kind of a rough start to the season after they took Iona to overtime and then lost 2 straight against Philadelphia teams, but they're 9-3. They're winning their games by a lot right now, and they even sort of competed with Villanova, so they're playing some pretty good basketball, and I think you got to give this team credit after they lost a couple of key players to graduation and a couple guys transferred. So they're looking good.
Yeah, they start off with, I mean, about as tough as it gets, having to play Dayton on opening night. But it's going to be a good scouting opportunity for us. I know LaSalle's kind of the one team in the conference that I wish I'd seen more of in the non-con. But a lot of weird games, and I'm going to blame Flo Hoops for me not seeing a lot of their best games.
Yeah.
But, you know, the Explorers, I mean, they've just been impressive to this point. That's the best thing I can say. I don't think 9-3 is indicative of what their A-10 record's going to look like. But I'd put them confidently in 10th at this point, and that's despite the fact that I still love a lot of UMass's talent. I just don't think that this team should be playing on Wednesday. I think they're safe to avoid the bye. But the one thing that kind of concerns me with them going forward is it's still basically just last year's team without Pookie. They're getting great production out of Ed Crosswell. No surprise there. He's taken the step up we expected. But guys like Isaiah Dees and David Beatty, Saul Fury, their stat lines aren't too different from last season, which is perfectly fine if those are your number 2, number 3, number 4 guys on the perimeter. And as the games get tougher, I think they're really, really, really going to start to miss Pookie. And so against a team like Dayton, I'm not sure they have the upset potential that they quite had last season. But you know what? I feel like I'm being a little too negative right now. They've been a great three-point shooting team, 35%. As you've said, They love to shoot threes. They're going to shoot a ton of them. And it gives them an extra level of variability. And more importantly than that, 27% three-point defense, that's best in the league. That's going to be huge against teams like Richmond. And it's just like with Duquesne, if that three-point defense keeps up, then they're going to be really, really dangerous.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned Pukki, how they really don't have a star this year. Their leading scorer, Isaiah Deese, is only averaging just under 12 points a game, so they don't have anyone that's really carrying them. Although we did get a question from Philly Independent who asked us to talk about LaSalle's freshman class. So they've had a couple guys step up and make some starts. The first guy I want to talk about, Sharif Kenny, averaging 7 points a game, 2 assists. He reminds me a lot of Jordan Price, mostly just because of the way he's built. He's 6'4", built more like a linebacker than a shooting guard, probably. I think he has the potential to be pretty good. I've seen him do a lot of good things going to the basket. He's made some shots from outside, even though he's only 30% from three right now. But I feel like eventually, once he gets more comfortable and gets more experience, he's got the chance to be good. I mean, he's already getting a lot of minutes for LaSalle, playing about 20 minutes a game. And then they also have Ayinde Hakeem, who's gotten some time at point guard. He's had some turnover problems, but he's also got one of the best assist rates in the country. So those two guys in particular, I don't know how big of a role they're going to have once we get into conference play, but they're already getting a decent chunk of minutes. And I think that's setting up LaSalle to be pretty good here in the next couple of years. Those guys seem to have pretty good potential.
Yeah, and the one stat line that stands out with Sharif Kenny, and one of those games that we sadly lost on Flow Hoops. Come on, ESPN Plus, just buy Flow Hoops already.
Yeah, I wish.
Disney, we know you have the money, Disney. But the South Alabama game, Kenny ends up playing 33 minutes, 15 points, 4 assists. He was 3 of 6 shooting. But most importantly, he was 6 of 10. He was 8 of 10 from the line. And he has shown a strong ability to get to the line a few times this year. 7 foul shots against Morgan State, 6 against Wagner. That's the sign of a guy who could turn into a Pukki pal. And Pukki's ability to get into the paint and get into the line was the reason why he fits so well on this team of shooters and rebounders. And so Sharif Kenny is, I actually would say that he's the most likely to fill some of that Pukki void, despite the fact that he's not their best perimeter guy right now. But he's the type of X factor that this team needs to get into the top 8. And one quick prediction for the Explorers. I think they're going to be beating Dayton at halftime, and we're going to have to watch everybody either go into complete jubilation or complete and total panic in that game. It's kind of setting up really well for LaSalle to be up at halftime and then for Dayton to just gut it out and win by like 5 or 6.
Yeah, that game scares me. Dayton has not won at LaSalle in quite some time, and just the way LaSalle shoots threes, I think they're another team that if they get hot, they could beat some good teams or at least give them a scare. And they also just have a lot of different options. Even though no one's really stood out, they've got 6 guys scoring over 7 points a game. So a pretty good scoring distribution there. And just if one guy's not hitting threes, there's a good chance someone else is, because they've got a lot of guys that are over 30-35%, which is just, that's scary to play against when you have to worry about that many guys that can shoot the ball. And then one more guy, too, I just wanted to talk about. Scott Spencer, who transferred from Clemson, sitting at 8 points and 4 rebounds. So he's been pretty good for them, too, after not really getting much of a chance for Clemson the last couple years.
Yeah, I think Kenny's going to be the big X factor, but Spencer's still probably got a little bit more to give them, too.
Yeah, and so we got one more part to this question we received. Is LaSalle an NIT or NCAA tourney team next year? So they've definitely been on an upward trajectory after a pretty rough 2019. What do you think about next year? Do they have any chance to make some noise?
Well, I think it really comes down to the two guys we just talked about, Sharif Kenny and Scott Spencer. If one of them becomes a Pukki Pal level player, then yes. Because now, I'm not sure it's quite NCAA, but NIT is pretty believable for this team. like I said, I really am high on Ashley Howard. I think he's a fantastic young coach for them. They have all the requisite role guys on this team. Ed Crosswell is just a beast on the boards. And if he can continue to get his minutes per game up a little bit more, then he can be a reliable starting center slash number three option. But they're just missing the guy. And their role players aren't talented enough for them to get away with not having the guy. So if Scott Spencer or Sharif Kenny turns into that player, then yeah, they should reasonably expect to be in the NIT next season. But NCAA, probably pushing it a little bit, unless it turns out that they have a second potential superstar that we just don't even realize yet.
Yeah, and that might be Clifton Moore, who transferred from Indiana. He's going to be a big piece next year, but I don't think they're quite at that level just yet. I mean, after all, even though they are a lot improved, we're still probably talking about the 9th or 10th best team in the A-10 right now, so you got to trust the process. You guys know all about that in Philly, and it's going to take some time, but I agree. I am high on Ashley Howard. I think he's going to be a good coach, and LaSalle's moving in the right direction, so they're going to be a team to watch this year and the next couple years with him. So I guess those are really all the teams we wanted to spend a lot of time on. Any other thoughts on the middle of the pack? I mean, we kind of just neglected George Mason and St. Bonaventure, so sorry to you guys out there. Do you want to take like 10 seconds to say something about them before we wrap it up?
I'm good. We've talked about both of them a bunch, and really with the exception of recapping where VCU, Davidson, and Dayton have been, I didn't want to go into just the same redundancies that we've been talking about all December with these teams. And so those were the five that I felt like we both had some good new things to talk about. So we'll let the Bonnies and the Patriots go for now.
Yeah, I just want to say one thing, though. George Mason, they are who we thought they were. I'm sorry. They lost to TCU by 34. I'm not happy about that, but sorry. What were you going to say?
Here's the one thing for Mason. Like, what are we going to get from Kyer? He's still not back to full health yet, clearly. And he's basically the exact missing piece on this team. They got the guards have stepped up nicely with Hartwell and Johnson and Javon Green. AJ Wilson's been great so far this year. They got Jordan Miller to play the four. What this team is missing is just an elite scoring wing, and that's exactly who Justin Kyer is. But unfortunately for them, I'm just not sure we're going to see peak Justin Kyer again this season. And he's clearly just not 100% healthy yet. And if he doesn't get to that point, then the Patriots probably are buried to somewhere within the 7-10 range.
Yeah, no, I pretty much agree. And then the Bonnies, real quick, I mean, they did go on a nice winning streak, but outside of Rutgers, they haven't really beaten anyone that good yet, so Kyle Lofton's been playing well. That's about all I'm going to say for now. They're pretty good. They're in the middle of the pack. Never doubt Mark Schmidt's teams, right?
Yeah, I mean, they'll be better than they were in the non-conference. They always are, but as we said at the beginning of the year, this is a transition year for Bonaventure. With all the young guys, with all the new guys, I would say somewhere around 500 would probably be a successful season for them. And then can really start to get excited about the expectations for next year. Because while we always worry about the whole idea of, oh, just because everybody's back in a year more experience doesn't mean you're going to get better. But with Mark Schmidt teams, it normally does. So, you know what? This is a good transition year for the Bonnies. And they're going to give a lot of teams hell, but probably not getting a double bye.
No, I don't think they're going to do that this year. All right, so I think you had one of our questions we were going to talk about now.
Yeah, so we got a question from Dennis on Twitter, at WDC Invest, who asked us, where does Obi rank among the best A-10 players of the decade?
I guess it kind of depends how you look at the question, because he only spent 2 years in this decade compared to some other guys who spent more time. In terms of talent, I think he's the best. The other guys that kind of came to mind for me are Jalen Adams, DeAndre Bembry, and then Andrew Nicholson way back at the beginning of the decade. But I kind of have a hard time putting any of them ahead of Obi, because I don't think any of them save for maybe Nicholson, I don't think any of them really got lottery pick buzz that Obi's been getting this year.
I mean, the player of the decade in the conference was Nicholson. And I mean, I'm going to cheat a little bit because he came in the 2000s technically. And so, but I'm going to count all four of his years where he went from just being a great offensive matchup nightmare in his freshman year to being far and away the best guy in a pretty good A-10 in his senior year and basically just throwing Bonaventure on his back for a week to get them into the NCAA tournament. He's the player of the decade to me. Obi would, I mean, there's just nothing Obi could do in 2 years to surpass what he did in four.
Yeah.
But I think Obi is in that second tier with guys you mentioned, like Jalen Adams, like Bembry, like Tu Holloway. I think Jack Gibbs is probably in that group too. And so that's where I would put Obi, somewhere in like the second to eighth, I think it was what I counted out, range. He is an elite guy, and he's been so good in 2 years that it offsets the fact that this is probably the end of his Dayton career come March. I would put him, God, I think I would put him four right now behind Nicholson, Holloway. No, I put him five behind Nicholson, Holloway, Bembry, and Adams, but slightly ahead of like all the Davidson guys. God, even all the best Dayton and VCU teams were just, a lot of them were great collectives of players where there was no true best in the conference superstar.
Yeah, no, I think it is. I think the way you answered it's right if you're going for like the player of the decade and maybe who's the most accomplished player. And if you answer it that way, I'd say it's Nicholson. If we got 4 years of Obi, I think it would definitely be him, but there is only so much you can do in 2 years. One thing I do want to say, so A10 Talk posed this question to their followers, who are the best, or who was the player of the decade? My two favorite answers, I don't remember who said them, but we got a Rusty Regal and a Ahmed Hamdi from VCU. So those are some good answers. I miss those guys. I guess I'd like to throw Bobby Worley in the ring too. He had a good career at Dayton.
Can I not ironically pick Justin Tillman? Because anybody who is just a deadlock to get 12 rebounds a game and has that afro in combination, I think that's enough.
Yeah.
This isn't even a joke. Like, Justin Tillman's probably one of my five favorite A-10 players ever.
Oh, he was great. Yeah. No, he was the best player on a pretty bad VCU team his senior year, but he was still putting up huge numbers, and I think he made it onto the first team. So, yeah, he was fun. There's just a lot in general this week, a lot of talk about the end of the decade. We saw some people talk about the best games. We've seen some of the best players, and it's just kind of like a good trip down memory lane to revisit some of the highlights of the A-10 for the last 10 years.
Yeah, so I actually have a question for you that comes by way of myself, not even on Twitter.
Okay.
And kind of looking back to a what if from the later years of the decade. So where is Dayton right now if Archie never leaves? This on the heels of the Flyers being in the top 20 and the fact that Hoosiers Twitter is starting to get very, very, very restless.
Yeah, they were not happy after that Arkansas game. I don't think they'd be... I mean, right now they're having an amazing season. I don't see how Archie would be doing that much better this year. I'll start by saying the year after Archie left, so that was Anthony Grant's first year, I don't think that team was going to be very good no matter who the coach was. And even though it's really hard to do these what-ifs because Dayton's team would be completely different. I mean, Ryan Mikesell and Trey Landers would still be there probably, but there would be no Obi Toppin, no Jalen Crutcher, and instead you'd have some of Archie's recruits. So, I think last year probably would have been better under Archie just because there would have been more continuity. He would have developed guys like McKinley Wright into the system. But overall, I really don't think things would be that much different on January 1st, 2020. I think Archie would probably have Dayton near the top of the conference. But you know what? He wouldn't have had a lottery pick at Dayton because without Anthony Grant, there's no Obi. So that's an interesting question. I mean, I'm kind of surprised with how poorly Indiana has done. I mean, they're still good this year, but they haven't really beaten that many great teams yet. So I think Dayton's in a good place right now with the players and coaches they have. I still think they'd be good with Archie, but there shouldn't be any regrets because Dayton's in a good place in 2020.
So for me, I think that if Archie had stuck around, the ceiling of this year's team being a Final Four contender is no longer there.
Yeah,
I still think they're a tournament lock right now and absolutely in contention to win the conference, because you look at how this team would be assembled. You still have these two just perfect quintessential glue guys. Meitzel and Landers are the last two Archie guys still on this team. They would have also had two of the seven or so best guys in the Pac-12.
Yeah.
With McKinley Wright, who, you know what? Shout out to McKinley Wright.
Oh, he owned Dayton.
He doesn't understand that Dayton University is not a place, but God, he put it to the Flyers in the United Center a few weeks ago. He would be a first-team All-A-10 player, undoubtedly. He would be a prime candidate for player of the year. And they would have the high flyer Naz Carter. And that's a pretty good four right there. And you know Archie would have found the requisite big man and a good bench. But I'd rather have Obi than any of those guys. I think last year definitely would have been better because the transition season was just so messy, where just too many good players from Archie left. And too many good players that Grant brought in weren't eligible yet. And so that year would have been better. All in all, I think Dayton surprisingly ended up being better off, if for no other reason than just because of this season. And Anthony Grant won big out of this. And you know what? Archie took a chance. You got to commend him for that. But he could have just been Greg Marshall and just kept the talent flowing into Dayton and just sat there getting a new contract extension every 2 years with basically unlimited job security.
So I guess I'll pose a question now. Where would VCU be if Will Wade never left? Would they have gotten busted by now, or do you think the cheating started at LSU? Because that's an interesting what if, I think.
My thoughts on the Will Wade VCU era are on record already. I don't think that you just out of nowhere start doing that in your first season with a new team.
Yeah.
Now, I'm sure he's doing it at a way larger scale at LSU. And so I'm not sure VCU would have ever been indicted in the FBI scandal had Will Wade not left. Because, by the way, I think we can take a pretty good guess that at least a half dozen guys cost us in this conference have probably been paid over the last few years. So the A-10 is not exactly this innocent bastion because you just don't get good players without paying them in this day and age. But you know what? VCU, I doubt they would have been mentioned in the FBI probe because if they are doing anything shady, it's probably on the lower end.
No, yeah, I agree.
I don't know if this team's any... Actually, no, this team's probably worse because they would have never gotten Evans.
That's true, yeah. No, I think they did a great job hiring Mike Rhodes. I mean, he's, after a rough first year, kind of like Anthony Grant, he turned it around even faster. And I really don't think VCU would have been that much different just because they've kind of, with the same line of coaches they've had, they all play a similar system. But I think VCU's in a good place, too. I just thought that was kind of interesting that Wade left really quickly from VCU in the first place. So I still think the Rams are in a good place, though. I mean, obviously, they're an A-10 contender still, and I don't think things would have been that much different. They might even be better now, like you said, with Mike Rhodes.
Yeah, and so we're done with Twitter questions, right?
Yeah, that's all I have.
So I want to close it out with one thing. A quick Sherlock Holmes of the conference. And we've really had two big mysteries here over the last few weeks. A pair of super talented backup power forwards have kind of just disappeared since mid-December. And so while we have no clarity on what actually happened, we did get a resolution with Rhodey backup Dana Tate, who, as you mentioned earlier, is going to transfer and has left the school. The other big mystery, Chase Johnson of Dayton. And, you know, there's been plenty of conspiracies. They've said that he's been sick this whole time. Obviously, if he actually has been sick, then that's very bad. People don't just get sick for 2 weeks to the point that they can't play basketball over that time. And so if that is true, definitely a concerning thing. It doesn't help the speculation that the first game he missed was the first game after finals. But Dayton came out the other day and said that he's suffering from post-concussion syndrome. And that's just not the kind of thing you really make up. And if you do, you would just leak it to somebody like Jablo and not just come out and make a formal announcement about it. So maybe I'm just being naive, but I'm compelled at the moment to believe that that is a truth, that it, that is the truth.
Yeah, no, I definitely feel better since Dayton put out a statement, although it is kind of strange that they didn't say anything for weeks. And that's kind of why people got suspicious. And there's a lot of conspiracy theories floating around the internet. I mean, he's got a right to privacy, so hopefully it's nothing serious. And I hope we see him back on the court because I thought he was playing pretty well for UD. But it has been an interesting situation, and UD has been kind of known to hide injuries from the public until they really need to say anything. I'm glad that UD came out and said something. Hopefully it's nothing seriously wrong with Chase, and I hope we see him back on the court, but that's definitely been concerning for the Flyers because he's a pretty useful backup big man, and I think they could use him.
Yeah, and so last thing before we wrap this up, it is opening weekend. Plenty of exciting games. I know the ones I really got my eye on. I'm excited to learn more about LaSalle against a really tough opponent on Thursday when they host Dayton. We're going to learn a lot about both St. Louis and Duquesne as the Dukes finally shift over to Robert Morris. The LaRoche gym days are over. That's another Thursday night game. And then the one that really, really intrigues me on Sunday is VCU going up against George Mason.
Yeah, I mean, first I'll start with the St. Louis-Duquesne game. I think we're going to learn a lot. Both those teams have two losses, so they've played well this season. But Duquesne's kind of moving in the wrong direction, so I'm interested to see if they can bounce back. I think they have the physicality with Mike Hughes and Bailey Seal where they can hang with Hassan French inside, but we'll see. I mean, because they haven't played well the last week or so. And then that next game you mentioned, VCU at George Mason. You know that the Mason fans are going to get up. That's probably one of their biggest games every year when they get to host VCU. And so far, I mean, as we talked about, VCU hasn't really blown our expectations out of the water. Last year, they went to George Mason and won by 30 on their senior night, so they definitely have the capability of winning there. But I think that could be a tough game, and that's going to be a big test for George Mason, a team that hasn't really shown up against good competition yet, but they're going to have a really big chance to open the conference season at home.
Yeah, I'm super excited. I don't know if you care to give your top 14 in order before as we move into conference season, let it be on record.
Yeah, I'll do that. This is going to be completely improvised. I'll just run through them real quick. Dayton's going to win. I'll say VCU second, although it's really close with Rhode Island. And so I'll say Rhode Island third. I still have faith in Richmond, so I'll put them fourth. And then St. Louis fifth. I think there's a pretty big drop-off after that, to be honest. Let's say Davidson, St. Bonaventure, Duquesne, Mason, LaSalle, and then, God, the bottom four. UMass is definitely better than the other three teams I haven't mentioned yet, so I'll say UMass at 11, Mayhem at 12, and then Fordham has to be last, so St. Joe's goes to 13th. But what do you have a list prepared?
Yeah, we're way more similar than I had hoped.
That's always disappointing. I'm sorry.
I'll take Dayton 1. I'm going to take Rhode Island 2. It's going to come back to bite me. VCU 3. I'll take SLU at 4. Richmond at 5. Bonnie 6, Duquesne 7, Davidson 8, because God, that thing is just becoming a disaster. Mason 9, LaSalle 10, UMass 11, GW 12, Fordham's too high at 13, and St. Joe's.
Oh, Fordham is way too high. I will say, if there's one team from the bottom that could make a run, I'll say UMass has a chance to make it to, like, 7th place. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but they have a great freshman class. They recently had one of their transfers, Debaji Walker, gain eligibility for the rest of the season. And so if TJ Weeks gets healthy and the rest of their freshmen start playing even better, they have a chance to rise up. I don't see anything from the other bottom teams, really. But I guess I'll say UMass has that sleeper potential where they could make it up to, like, 6th or 7th.
I think it's kind of the opposite for the Minutemen. I think they're probably buried in at least the bottom five. But they're the team that on a night-to-night basis is going to be the most dangerous at the bottom. I just don't think the consistency is there for them to win maybe more than 6 games. But two of those 6 wins could be against top 5 teams. And that's just the season it's going to be for the Minutemen. They're not going to get a ton of wins, but they're going to scare the crap out of a lot of good teams.
Yeah, and it's kind of interesting because they've lost a lot of games this year, but really none of those came against bad teams. So that's why I feel like they're going to take care of the bad teams like St. Joe's and Fordham. But there is still a question, can they go and beat a quality team in the A-10? Like, especially on the road, because that's always tough when you have a young team. I think, I mean, we say this about a bunch of teams, but they're a year away.
Yeah, definitely. And so for me, I just want to end on this. My three big marked games, the three that I'm already getting excited about. So my favorite opening week game, as I already mentioned, I think that we're going to learn a ton about both teams on I forgot to mention this game. So let's mark that down in the error category. Sunday at noon, Richmond at Rhode Island.
Oh yeah.
As I said, I think that that game is a huge matchup advantage for the Rams. This is the kind of game where they start to build their NCAA tournament case. So that's my favorite opening week game. My favorite game to look forward to just in total, ironically, also features Rhode Island. It's the night that Dayton goes to Kingston, a game that I feel is going to be basically Rhode Island's Super Bowl, a chance to really lock down their at-large bid, and it comes at the perfect time, March 4th, 9 p.m. Keep forgetting I'm staring at Central Time over here. That's a chance for the Rams to really just kind of lock in their at-large bid if they play up to expectations. And then most importantly, the you better make sure you flush game of the year. St. Joe's and Fordham, it's going to be a great doozy. And they saved it all the way to Leap Day. ESPN Plus at 1 p.m. I can't think of a more bizarre time or day to play this game. St. Joe's hosting Fordham. Going to be battling to stay out of the basement, to stay out of the crap. You know what? Let's start the hype train now already. Oh. The countdown is on.
Yeah, I will make sure to tune in for that one. That's going to be a big day for the conference. So I guess before we wrap it up, we are the three-bid league. Are we still getting 3 bids this year? Because right now it's kind of up in the air. I think we've got a chance, but it'll be interesting. Do you think we can improve on last year's finish?
Well, it's the same 3 questions I said earlier. Can Fats continue to play smart? Can Langevin be a first-team All-A-10 guy? And can Antoine Walker give them a bunch of help? Because I think that the 3 big question comes down to Rhode Island.
Yeah, no, I mean, they have a lot of opportunities. They get home and homes with Dayton and VCU. And so that's going to be – I'm definitely rooting for more than 2 teams to make it because last year is kind of disappointing, but – the good news is we have one team that's in really good shape to get in at large and a couple more with a good chance if they make noise in the A-10. So there's a lot to keep an eye on, a lot of teams that have a lot to play for this year, and that's just going to be fun. This is only January, and there's so much basketball to be played.
So I'll throw it out. I guess it's time to solidify the predictions. I think Dayton will be a 4. I think that VCU and Rhode Island will both be 10s. I think that Rhode Island will win the A-10 tournament because God knows we can't ever actually have the one seed winning in the A-10. And then I think St. Bonaventure and Richmond both end up in the NIT, with Duquesne and St. Bonaventure having CBI invitations if they choose to actually go there.
I guess I'll say I think Dayton's going to get a 6 seed. I just think the committee isn't going to show the A-10 that much love. I'm going to say Rhode Island wins the A-10 tournament also because Dayton can't win it ever. I'll say Rhode Island gets an 11, and then VCU's going to get an at-large. They'll get a 9 seed, I think. And then I think Richmond is going to be very close. I think they're probably going to get like a 1 or 2 seed in the NIT, but they're going to come up just short. Same with St. Louis. I think they're going to make the NIT. And there might be a CBI team, but the A-10 hasn't really done anything with the CBI the last couple years, so I'll just say those 5 teams make the postseason.
Yeah, so that seems like a fun way to wrap up and get everybody ready for conference season. As always, please send us your Twitter questions. We love having stuff to answer. Just send them to us at @3BidLeague. Shoot us an email, 3BidLeaguePod@gmail.com. And please leave us an iTunes review if you enjoyed the show. 5 stars, really appreciated. Any comments and feedback, really appreciated. Just always let us know what you're thinking about the show. And let's enjoy these next 18 games for everyone.
St. Joseph's season comes down to this. Miles gets a 3. 4.